Manwë has no thought for his own honour, and is not jealous of his power, but rules all to peace. The Vanyar he loved best of all the elves, and of him they received song and poetry, for poetry is the delight of Manwë, and the song of words is his music. His raiment is blue, and blue is the fire of his eyes, and his scepter is of sapphire, which the Noldor wrought for him. And he was appointed to be the vice-regent of Ilúvatar, king of the world of Valar and elves and men, and the chief defence against the evil of Melkor. With Manwë dwelt Varda the most beautiful, she who in the Sindarin tongue is named Elbereth, queen of the Valar, maker of the stars, and with them were a great host of spirits in blessedness. But Ulmo was alone, and he abode not in Valinor, nor ever came thither, unless there were need for a great council. He dwelt from the beginning of Arda in the outer ocean, and still he dwells there. Thence he governs the flowing of all waters, and the ebbing, the courses of all rivers, and the replenishment of springs, the distilling of all dews and rain in every land beneath the sky. In the deep places he gives thought to music great and terrible, and the echo of that music runs through all the veins of the world in sorrow and in joy. For if joyful is the fountain that rises in the sun, its springs are in the wells of sorrow unfathomed at the foundation of the earth. The Teleri learned much of Ulmo, and for this reason their music has both sadness and enchantment. Salmar came with him to Arda, he who made the horns of Ulmo, that none may ever forget who once has heard them, and Osse and Unen also, to whom he gave the government of the waves and the movement of the inner seas, and many other spirits beside. And thus it was by the power of Ulmo that even under the darkness of Melkor life coursed still through many secret lodes, and the earth did not die. And to all who were lost in that darkness or wandered far from the light of the Valar, the ear of Ulmo was ever open. Nor has he ever forsaken Middle-earth, and whatsoever may since have befallen of ruin or of change, he has not ceased to take thought for it, and will not until the end of days. And in that time of dark, Yavanna also was unwilling utterly to forsake the outer lands, for all things that grow are dear to her, and she mourned for the works that she had begun in Middle-earth, but Melkor had marred. Therefore, leaving the house of Aule and the flowering meads of Valinor, she would come at times and heal the hurts of Melkor. And returning, she would ever urge the Valar to that war with his evil dominion, that they must surely wage ere the coming of the firstborn. And Orome, tamer of beasts, would ride too at whiles in the darkness of the unlit forests. As a mighty hunter, he came with spear and bow, pursuing to the death the monsters and fell creatures of the kingdom of Melkor. And his white horse Naha shone like silver in the shadows. Then the sleeping earth trembled at the beat of his golden hooves. And in the twilight of the world, Orome would sound Valaroma, his great horn, upon the plains of Arda, whereat the mountains echoed, and the shadow of evil fled away, and Melkor himself quailed in Utumno, foreboding the wrath to come. But even as Orome passed, the servants of Melkor would gather again, and the lands were filled with shadows and deceit. Now all is said concerning the manner of the earth and its rulers in the beginning of days, and ere the world became such as the children of Ilúvatar have known it. For elves and men are the children of Ilúvatar, and since they understood not fully that theme by which the children entered into the music, none of the Ainur dared to add anything to their fashion. For which reason, the Valar are to these kindreds rather their elders and their chieftains than their masters. And if ever in their dealings with elves and men the Ainur have endeavoured to force them when they would not be guided, Seldom has this turned to good, howsoever good the intent. The dealings of the Ainur have indeed been mostly with the elves, for Ilúvatar made them more like in nature to the Ainur, though less in might and stature. Whereas to men, he gave strange gifts. For it is said that after the departure of the Valar there was silence, and for an age Ilúvatar sat alone in thought. Then he spoke and said, "Behold, I love the earth, which shall be a mansion for the Quendi and the Atani. But the Quendi shall be the fairest of all earthly creatures, and they shall have and shall conceive and bring forth more beauty than all my children, and they shall have the greater bliss in this world. But to the Atani I will give a new gift." Therefore he willed that the hearts of men should seek beyond the world, and should find no rest therein, but they should have a virtue to shape their life amid the powers and chances of the world, beyond the music of the Ainur, which is as fate to all things else. And of their operation everything should be in form and deed completed, and the world fulfilled unto the last and smallest. But Ilúvatar knew that men, being set amid the turmoils of the powers of the world, would stray often, and would not use their gifts in harmony. And he said, "These two in their time shall find that all that they do redounds at the end only to the glory of my work." Yet the elves believe that men are often a grief to Manwë, who knows most of the mind of Ilúvatar. For it seems to the elves that men resembled Melkor most of all the Ainur, although he has ever feared and hated them, even those that served him. It is one with this gift of freedom that the children of men dwell only a short space in the world alive, and are not bound to it, and depart soon, whither the elves know not. Whereas the elves remain until the end of days, and their love of the earth and all the world is more single and more poignant therefore, and as the years lengthen ever more sorrowful. For the elves die not till the world dies, unless they are slain or waste in grief, and to both these seeming deaths they are subject. Neither does age subdue their strength, unless one grow weary of 10,000 centuries. And dying they are gathered to the halls of Mandos in Valinor, whence they may in time return. But the sons of men die indeed, and leave the world. Wherefore they are called the guests, or the strangers. Death is their fate, the gift of Ilúvatar, which as time wears even the powers shall envy. But Melkor has cast his shadow upon it, and confounded it with darkness, and brought forth evil out of good, and fear out of hope. Yet of old the Valar declared to the elves in Valinor that men shall join in the second music of the Ainur. Whereas Ilúvatar has not revealed what he purposes for the elves after the world's end, and Melkor has not discovered it. Of Aule and Yavanna. It is told that in their beginning the dwarves were made by Aule in the darkness of Middle-earth. For so greatly did Aule desire the coming of the children, to have learners to whom he could teach his lore and his crafts, that he was unwilling to await the fulfillment of the designs of Ilúvatar. And Aule made the dwarves even as they still are, because the forms of the children who were to come were unclear to his mind, and because the power of Melkor was yet over the earth. And he wished, therefore, that they should be strong and unyielding. But fearing that the other Valar might blame his work, he wrought in secret, and he made first the 7 fathers of the dwarves in a hall under the mountains in Middle-earth. Now Ilúvatar knew what was done, and in the very hour that Aule's work was complete, and he was pleased, and began to instruct the dwarves in the speech that he had devised for them. Ilúvatar spoke to him, and Aula heard his voice and was silent. And the voice of Ilúvatar said to him, "Why hast thou done this? Why dost thou attempt a thing which thou knowest is beyond thy power and thy authority? For thou hast from me as a gift thy own being only, and no more. And therefore the creatures of thy hand and mind can live only by that being, moving when thou thinkest to move them, and if thy thought be elsewhere standing idle, is that thy desire?" Then Aula answered, "I did not desire such lordship. I desired things other than I am, to love and to teach them, so that they too might perceive the beauty of Ea, which thou hast caused to be. For it seemed to me that there is great room in Arda for many things that might rejoice in it, yet it is for the most part empty still and dumb. And in my impatience I have fallen into folly. Yet the making of things is in my heart from my own making by thee. And the child of little understanding that makes a play of the deeds of his father may do so without thought of mockery, but because he is the son of his father. But what shall I do now, so that thou be not angry with me forever? As a child to his father, I offer to thee these things, the work of the hands which thou hast made. Do with them what thou wilt. But should I not rather destroy the work of my presumption?" Then Aula took up a great hammer to smite the dwarves, and he wept. But Ilúvatar had compassion upon Aula and his desire because of his humility. And the dwarves shrank from the hammer and were afraid, and they bowed down their heads and begged for mercy. And the voice of Ilúvatar said to Aula, "Thy offer I accepted even as it was made. Dost thou not see that these things have now a life of their own and speak with their own voices? Else they would not have flinched from thy blow, nor from any command of thy will." Then Aula cast down his hammer and was glad, and he gave thanks to Ilúvatar, saying, "May Eru bless my work and amend it." But Ilúvatar spoke again and said, "Even as I gave being to the thoughts of the Ainur at the beginning of the world, so now I have taken up thy desire and given to it a place therein. But in no other way will I amend thy handiwork. And as thou hast made it, so shall it be. But I will not suffer this, that these should come before the firstborn of my design, nor that thy impatience should be rewarded. They shall sleep now in the darkness under stone, and shall not come forth until the firstborn have awakened upon earth. And until that time, thou and they shall wait, though long it seem. But when the time comes, I will awaken them, and they shall be to thee as children, and often strife shall arise between thine and mine, the children of my adoption, and the children of my choice." Then Aula took the seven fathers of the dwarves and laid them to rest in far sundered places. And he returned to Valinor and waited while the long years lengthened. Since they were to come in the days of the power of Melkor, Aula made the dwarves strong to endure. Therefore they are stone-hard, stubborn, fast in friendship and in enmity, and they suffer toil and hunger and hurt of body more hardily than all other speaking peoples. And they live long, far beyond the span of men, yet not forever. Aforetime it was held among the elves in Middle-earth that dying the dwarves returned to the earth and the stone of which they were made. Yet that is not their own belief, for they say that Aula, the Maker, whom they call Mahal, cares for them and gathers them to Mandos in halls set apart, and that he declared to their fathers of old that Ilúvatar will hallow them and give them a place among the children in the end. Then their part shall be to serve Aula and to aid him in the remaking of Arda after the last battle. They say also that the seven fathers of the dwarves return to live again in their own kin and to bear once more their ancient names, of whom Durin was the most renowned in after ages, father of that kindred most friendly to the elves, whose mansions were at Khazad Dûm. Now when Aula laboured in the making of the dwarves, he kept his work hidden from the other Valar. But at last he opened his mind to Yavanna and told her of all that had come to pass. Then Yavanna said to him, "Eru is merciful. Now I see that thy heart rejoiceth, as indeed it may, for thou hast received not only forgiveness, but bounty. Yet because thou hiddest this thought from me until its achievement, thy children will have little love for the things of my love. They will love first the things made by their own hands, as doth their father. They will delve in the earth, and the things that grow and live upon the earth they will not heed. Many a tree shall feel the bite of their iron without pity." But Aula answered, "That shall also be true of the children of Iluvatar, for they will eat and they will build. And though the things of thy realm have worth in themselves and would have worth if no children were to come, yet Eru will give them dominion. And they shall use all that they find in Arda, though not by the purpose of Eru, without respect or without gratitude. Not unless Melkor darken their hearts," said Yavanna. And she was not appeased, but grieved in heart, fearing what might be done upon Middle-earth in days to come. Therefore she went before Manwë, and she did not betray the counsel of Aule, but she said, "King of Arda, is it true, as Aule hath said to me, that the children, when they come, shall have dominion over all the things of my labour, to do as they will therewith?" "It is true," said Manwë. "But why dost thou ask? For thou hadst no need of the teaching of Aule." Then Yavanna was silent and looked into her own thought, and she answered, "Because my heart is anxious, thinking of the days to come. All my works are dear to me. Is it not enough that Melkor should have marred so many? Shall nothing that I have devised be free from the dominion of others?"
"If thou hadst thy will, what wouldst thou reserve?" said Manwë.
"Of all thy realm, what dost thou hold dearest?"
"All have their worth," said Yavanna, "and each contributes to the worth of the others. But the Kelvar can flee or defend themselves, whereas the Alvar that grow cannot, and among these I hold trees dear. Long in the growing, swift shall they be in the felling, and unless they pay toll with fruit upon bough little mourned in their passing. So I see in my thought, would that the trees might speak on behalf of all things that have roots, and punish those that wrong them."
"This is a strange thought," said Manwë.
"Yet it was in the song," said Yavanna. "For while thou wert in the heavens, and with Ulmo built the clouds and poured out the rains, I lifted up the branches of great trees to receive them, and some sang to Iluvatar amid the wind and the rain." Then Manwë sat silent, and the thought of Yavanna that she had put into his heart grew and unfolded, and it was beheld by Iluvatar. Then it seemed to Manwë that the song rose once more about him, and he heeded now many things therein, that though he had heard them, he had not heeded before. And at last the vision was renewed. But it was not now remote, for he was himself within it. And yet he saw that all was upheld by the hand of Iluvatar, and the hand entered in, and from it came forth many wonders that had until then been hidden from him in the hearts of the Ainur. Then Manwë awoke, and he went down to Yavanna upon Ezelohar, and he sat beside her beneath the two trees. And Manwë said, O Kementari, Eru hath spoken, saying, Do then any of the Valar suppose that I did not hear all the song, even the least sound of the least voice? Behold, when the children awake, then the thought of Yavanna will awake also, and it will summon spirits from afar, and they will go among the Kelvar and the Olvar. And some will dwell therein, and be held in reverence, and their just anger shall be feared. For a time, while the firstborn are in their power, and while the secondborn are young. But dost thou not remember, Kementari, that thy thought sang not always alone? Did not thy thought and mine meet also, so that we took wing together, like great birds that soar above the clouds? That also shall come to be by the heed of Iluvata. And before the children awake, there shall go forth with wings like the wind the eagles of the lords of the west. Then Yavanna was glad, and she stood up, reaching her arms towards the heavens, and she said, High shall climb the trees of Kementari, that the eagles of the king may house therein. But Manwe rose also, and it seemed that he stood to such a height that his voice came down to Yavanna as from the paths of the winds. Nay, he said, only the trees of Aula will be tall enough. In the mountains the eagles shall house, and hear the voices of those who call upon us. But in the forests shall walk the shepherds of the trees. Then Manwe and Yavanna parted for that time, and Yavanna returned to Aula, and he was in his smithy pouring molten metal into a mould. Eru is bountiful, she said. Now let thy children beware, for there shall walk a power in the forests whose wrath they will arouse at their peril. Nonetheless, they will have need of wood, said Aula, and he went on with his smith work. Of the coming of the elves and the captivity of Melkor. Through long ages the Valar dwelt in bliss in the light of the trees beyond the mountains of Aman, but all Middle-earth lay in twilight under the stars. While the lamps had shone, growth began there which now was checked, because all was again dark. But already the oldest living things had arisen, in the seas the great weeds, and on earth the shadow of great trees. And in the valleys of the night-clad hills there were dark creatures old and strong. To those lands and forests the Valar seldom came, save only Yavanna and Orima. And Yavanna would walk there in the shadows, grieving, because the growth and promise of the spring of Arda was stayed. And she set asleep upon many things that had arisen in the spring, so that they should not age, but should wait for a time of awakening, that yet should be. But in the north, Melkor built his strength, and he slept not, but watched and labored. And the evil things that he had perverted walked abroad, and the dark and slumbering woods were haunted by monsters and shapes of dread. And in Otumno, he gathered his demons about him, those spirits who first adhered to him in the days of his splendor, and became most like him in his corruption. Their hearts were of fire, but they were cloaked in darkness, and terror went before them. They had whips of flame. Balrogs they were named in Middle-earth in later days. And in that dark time Melkor bred many other monsters of divers shapes and kinds that long troubled the world. And his realm spread now ever southward over Middle-earth. And Melkor made also a fortress and armory not far from the northwestern shores of the sea, to resist any assault that might come from Aman. That stronghold was commanded by Sauron, lieutenant of Melkor, and it was named Angband. It came to pass that the Valar held council, for they became troubled by the tidings
that Yavanna and Orime brought from the outer lands. And Yavanna spoke before the Valar, saying, "Ye mighty of Arda, the vision of Ilúvatar was brief and soon taken away, so that maybe we cannot guess within a narrow count of days the hour appointed. Yet be sure of this. The hour approaches, and within this age our hope shall be revealed, and the children shall awake. Shall we then leave the lands of their dwelling desolate and full of evil? Shall they walk in darkness while we have light? Shall they call Melkor Lord while Manwë sits upon Tani Gwetil?" And Tolkas cried, "Nay, let us make war swiftly. Have we not rested from strife overlong, and is not our strength now renewed? Shall one alone contest with us forever?" But at the bidding of Manwë, Mandos spoke, and he said, "In this age, the children of Ilúvatar shall come indeed, but they come not yet. Moreover, it is doomed that the firstborn shall come in the darkness, and shall look first upon the stars. Great light shall be for their waning. To Varda ever shall they call at need." Then Varda went forth from the council, and she looked out from the height of Tani Gwetil, and beheld the darkness of Middle-earth beneath the innumerable stars, faint and far. Then she began a great labor, greatest of all the works of the Valar since their coming into Arda. She took the silver dews from the vats of Telperion, and therewith she made new stars, and brighter against the coming of the firstborn. Wherefore, she whose name out of the deeps of time and the labors of Ea was Tintala, the Kindler, was called after by the elves Elantari, Queen of the Stars. Carnhill and Luinil, Nena and Lumbar, Alcarinque and Elamira she wrought in that time, and many other of the ancient stars she gathered together and set as signs in the heavens of Arda. Wilwarin, Telumendil, Soronume, and Anarima, and Menelmaka with his shining belt that forebodes the last battle that shall be at the end of days. And high in the north as a challenge to Melkor, she set the crown of 7 mighty stars to swing. Valakirka, the sickle of the Valar, and sign of doom. It is told that even as Varda ended her labors, and they were long, when first Menelmakar strode up the sky, and the blue fire of Heluin flickered in the mists above the borders of the world, in that hour the children of the earth awoke, the firstborn of Ilúvatar. By the starlit mirror of Cuivienin, water of awakening, they rose from the sleep of Ilúvatar. And while they dwelt yet silent by Cuivienin, their eyes beheld first of all things the stars of heaven. Therefore they have ever loved the starlight, and have revered Varda Elantari above all the Valar. In the changes of the world the shapes of lands and of seas have been broken and remade. Rivers have not kept their courses, neither have mountains remained steadfast. And to Cuivienin there is no returning. But it is said among the elves that it lay far off in the east of Middle-earth, and northward, and it was a bay in the inland sea of Helkar, and that sea stood where aforetime the roots of the mountain of Iluin had been before Melkor overthrew it. Many waters flowed down thither from heights in the east, and the first sound that was heard by the elves was the sound of water flowing, and the sound of water falling over stone. Long they dwelt in their first home by the water under stars, and they walked the earth in wonder, and they began to make speech and to give names to all things that they perceived. Themselves they named the Quendi, signifying those that speak with voices, for as yet they had met no other living things that spoke or sang. And on a time it chanced that Orime rode eastward in his hunting,
and he turned north by the shores of Helkar and passed under the shadows of the Orokani, the mountains of the east. Then, on a sudden, Naha set up a great neighing and stood still. And Orome wondered and sat silent, and it seemed to him that in the quiet of the land under the stars he heard afar off many voices singing. Thus it was that the Valar found at last, as it were by chance, those whom they had so long awaited. And Orome, looking upon the elves, was filled with wonder, as though they were beings sudden and marvellous and unforeseen. For so it shall ever be with the Valar. From without the world, though all things may be forethought in music or foreshown in vision from afar, to those who enter verily into Ea, each in its time shall be met at unawares as something new and unforetold. In the beginning, the elder children of Iluvatar were stronger and greater than they have since become, but not more fair. For though the beauty of the Quendi in the days of their youth was beyond all other beauty that Iluvatar had caused to be, it has not perished but lives in the west, and sorrow and wisdom have enriched it. And Orome loved the Quendi, and named them in their own tongue Eldar, the people of the stars. But that name was after borne only by those who followed him upon the westward road. Yet many of the Quendi were filled with dread at his coming, and this was the doing of Melkor. For by after knowledge the wise declare that Melkor, ever watchful, was first aware of the awakening of the Quendi, and sent shadows and evil spirits to spy upon them and waylay them. So it came to pass some years ere the coming of Orome, that if any of the elves strayed far abroad, alone or few together, they would often vanish and never return. And the Quendi said that the hunter had caught them, and they were afraid. And indeed the most ancient songs of the elves, of which echoes are remembered still in the west, tell of the shadow shapes that walked in the hills above Quivienen, or would pass suddenly over the stars. And of the dark rider upon his wild horse that pursued those that wandered to take them and devour them. Now Melkor greatly hated and feared the riding of Orome, and either he sent indeed his dark servants as riders, or he set lying whispers abroad for the purpose that the Quendi should shun Orome, if ever they should meet. Thus it was that when Naha neighed, and Orome indeed came among them, some of the Quendi hid themselves, and some fled and were lost. But those that had courage and stayed perceived swiftly that the great rider was no shape out of darkness, for the light of Aman was in his face, and all the noblest of the elves were drawn towards it. But of those unhappy ones who were ensnared by Melkor, little is known of a certainty. For who of the living has descended into the pits of Utomno, or has explored the darkness of the councils of Melkor? Yet this is held true by the wise of Eressia, that all those of the Quendi who came into the hands of Melkor, ere Utomno was broken, were put there in prison, and by slow arts of cruelty were corrupted and enslaved. And thus did Melkor breed the hideous race of the orcs, in envy and mockery of the elves, of whom they were afterwards the bitterest foes. For the orcs had life, and multiplied after the manner of the children of Iluvatar. Nought that had life of its own, nor the semblance of life, could ever Melkor make since his rebellion in the Ainulindale before the beginning. So say the wise. And deep in their dark hearts, the orcs loathed the master whom they served in fear, the maker only of their misery. This, it may be, was the vilest deed of Melkor, and the most hateful to Iluvatar. Orome stayed a while among the Quendi, and then swiftly he rode back over land and sea to Valinor, and brought the tidings to Valmar, and he spoke of the shadows that troubled Quivienen. Then the Valar rejoiced, and yet they were in doubt amid their joy,
and they debated long what counsel it were best to take for the guarding of the Quendi from the shadow of Melkor. But Arime returned at once to Middle-earth and abode with the elves. Manwë sat long in thought upon Tani Quetil, and he sought the counsel of Ilúvatar. And coming then down to Valmar, he summoned the Valar to the Ring of Doom, and thither came even Ulmo from the outer sea. Then Manwë said to the Valar, "This is the counsel of Ilúvatar in my heart, that we should take up again the mastery of Arda, at whatsoever cost, and deliver the Quendi from the shadow of Melkor." Then Tulkas was glad, but Aule was grieved, foreboding the hurts of the world that must come of that strife. But the Valar made ready, and came forth from Aman in strength of war, resolving to assault the fortresses of Melkor and make an end. Never did Melkor forget that this war was made for the sake of the elves, and that they were the cause of his downfall. Yet they had no part in those deeds, and they know little of the riding of the might of the West against the North in the beginning of their days. Melkor met the onset of the Valar in the northwest of Middle-earth, and all that region was much broken. But the first victory of the hosts of the West was swift, and the servants of Melkor fled before them to Otomno. Then the Valar passed over Middle-earth, and they set a guard over Quivienen, and thereafter the Quendi knew nothing of the great battle of the powers, save that the earth shook and groaned beneath them, and the waters were moved, and in the north there were lights as of mighty fires. Long and grievous was the siege of Utomno, and many battles were fought before its gates, of which naught but the rumour is known to the elves. In that time the shape of Middle-earth was changed, and the great sea that sundered it from Aman grew wide and deep, and it broke in upon the coasts, and made a deep gulf to the southward. Many lesser bays were made between the great gulf and Hel-Caraxa far in the north, where Middle-earth and Aman came nigh together. Of these, the Bay of Balar was the chief, and into it the mighty river Sirion flowed down from the new-raised highlands northwards, Dorthonion and the mountains about Hithlum. The lands of the far north were all made desolate in those days, for there Utumno was delved exceeding deep, and its pits were filled with fires and with great hosts of the servants of Melkor. But at the last the gates of Utumno were broken, and the halls unroofed, and Melkor took refuge in the uttermost pit. Then Tulkas stood forth as champion of the Valar, and wrestled with him, and cast him upon his face, and he was bound with the chain Angainor that Aule had wrought, and led captive, and the world had peace for a long age. Nonetheless, the Valar did not discover all the mighty vaults and caverns hidden with deceit far under the fortresses of Angband and Utomno. Many evil things still lingered there, and others were dispersed and fled into the dark, and roamed in the waste places of the world awaiting a more evil hour. And Sauron they did not find. But when the battle was ended, and from the ruin of the north great clouds arose and hid the stars, the Valar drew Melkor back to Valinor, bound hand and foot and blindfold, and he was brought to the Ring of Doom. There he lay upon his face before the feet of Manwë and sued for pardon. But his prayer was denied, and he was cast into prison in the fastness of Mandos, whence none can escape, neither Valar, nor elf, nor mortal man. Vast and strong are those halls, and they were built in the west of the land of Aman. There was Melkor doomed to abide for 3 ages long before his cause should be tried anew, or he should plead again for pardon. Then again the Valar were gathered in council, and they were divided in debate. For some, and of those Ulmo was the chief, held that the Quendi should be left free to walk as they would in Middle-earth, and with their gifts of skill to order all the lands and heal their hurts.
but the most part feared for the Quendi in the dangerous world amid the deceits of the starlit dusk. And they were filled, moreover, with the love of the beauty of the elves, and desired their fellowship. At the last, therefore, the Valar summoned the Quendi to Valinor, there to be gathered at the knees of the powers in the light of the trees forever. And Mandos broke his silence, saying, "So it is doomed." From this summons came many woes that afterwards befell. But the elves were at first unwilling to hearken to the summons, for they had as yet seen the Valar only in their wrath as they went to war, save Orome alone, and they were filled with dread. Therefore, Orome was sent again to them, and he chose from among them ambassadors who should go to Valinor and speak for their people, and these were Ingwe, Finwë, and Elwë, who afterwards were kings. And coming, they were filled with awe by the glory and majesty of the Valar, and desired greatly the light and splendor of the trees. Then Orome brought them back to Cui Vienen, and they spoke before their people, and counseled them to heed the summons of the Valar, and remove into the west. Then befell the first sundering of the elves. For the kindred of Ingwe, and the most part of the kindreds of Finwë and Elwë, were swayed by the words of their lords, and were willing to depart and follow Orome. And these were known ever after as the Eldar, by the name that Orome gave to the elves in the beginning in their own tongue. But many refused the summons, preferring the starlight and the wide spaces of Middle-earth to the rumour of the trees. And these are the Avari, the unwilling. And they were sundered in that time from the Eldar, and met never again until many ages were past. The Eldar prepared now a great march from their first homes in the east, and they were arrayed in three hosts. The smallest host, and the first to set forth, was led by Ingwe, the most high lord of all the elvish race. He entered into Valinor and sits at the feet of the powers, and all elves revere his name. But he came never back, nor looked again upon Middle-earth. The Vanyar were his people. They are the fair elves, the beloved of Manwë and Varda, and few among men have spoken with them. Next came the Noldor, a name of wisdom, the people of Finwë. They are the deep elves, the friends of Aule, and they are renowned in song, for they fought and labored long and grievously in the northern lands of old. The greatest host came last, and they are named the Teleri, for they tarried on the road, and were not wholly of a mind to pass from the dusk to the light of Valinor. In water they had great delight, and those that came at last to the western shores were enamoured of the sea. The sea elves, therefore, they became in the land of Aman, the Falmari, for they made music beside the breaking waves. Two lords they had, for their numbers were great, Elwë Singolo, which signifies grey mantle, and Olwë, his brother. These were the three kindreds of the Eldalia, who, passing at length into the uttermost west in the days of the trees, are called the Kalaquendi, elves of the light. But others of the Eldar there were who set out indeed upon the westward march, but became lost upon the long road, or turned aside, or lingered on the shores of Middle-earth. And these were for the most part of the kindred of the Teleri, as is told hereafter. They dwelt by the sea, or wandered in the woods and mountains of the world, yet their hearts were turned towards the west. Those elves the Kalaquendi called the Umanyar, since they came never to the land of Aman and the Blessed Realm. But the Umanyar and the Avari alike they call the Moriquendi, elves of the darkness, for they never beheld the light that was before the sun and moon. It is told that when the hosts of the Eldalia departed from Cui Vienen, Orome rode at their head upon Naha, his white horse shod with gold. And passing northward about the Sea of Helkar, they turned towards the west. Before them great clouds hung still black in the north above the ruins of war, and the stars in that region were hidden. Then not a few grew afraid and repented and turned back and are forgotten. Long and slow was the march of the Eldar into the west, for the leagues of Middle-earth were uncounted and weary and pathless. Nor did the Eldar desire to hasten, for they were filled with wonder at all that they saw, and by many lands and rivers they wished to abide. And though all were yet willing to wander, many feared rather their journey's end than hoped for it. Therefore, whenever Oromo departed, having at times other matters to heed, they halted and went forward no more until he returned to guide them. And it came to pass after many years of journeying in this manner that the Eldar took their course through a forest, and they came to a great river, wider than any they had yet seen, and beyond it were mountains whose sharp horns seemed to pierce the realm of the stars. This river, it is said, was even the river which was after called Anduin the Great, and was ever the frontier of the west lands of Middle-earth. But the mountains were the Hithaglia, the towers of mist upon the borders of Eriador. Yet they were taller and more terrible in those days, and were reared by Melkor to hinder the riding of Orome. Now the Teleri abode long on the east bank of that river, and wished to remain there. But the Vanyar and the Noldor passed over it, and Orome led them into the passes of the mountains. And when Orome was gone forward, the Teleri looked upon the shadowy heights, and were afraid. Then one arose in the host of Olwë, which was ever the hindmost on the road. Lenwë he was called. He forsook the westward march, and led away a numerous people southwards down the great river, and they passed out of the knowledge of their kin until long years were past. Those were the Nandor, and they became a people apart, unlike their kin, save that they loved water, and dwelt most beside falls and running streams. Greater knowledge they had of living things, tree and herb, bird and beast, than all other elves. In after years, Denethor, son of Lenwë, turned again west at last, and led a part of that people over the mountains into Beleriand, ere the rising of the moon. At length, the Vanyar and the Noldor came over Ered Luin, the Blue Mountains, between Eriador and the westernmost land of Middle-earth, which the elves after named Beleriand, and the foremost companies passed over the Vale of Sirion and came down to the shores of the great sea between Drengist and the Bay of Balar. But when they beheld it, great fear came upon them, and many withdrew into the woods and highlands of Beleriand. Then Orome departed and returned to Valinor to seek the counsel of Manwë, and left them. And the host of the Teleri passed over the misty mountains, and crossed the wide lands of Eriador, being urged on by Elwë Singolo. For he was eager to return to Valinor and the light that he had beheld, and he wished not to be sundered from the Noldor, for he had great friendship with Finwë, their lord. Thus, after many years, the Teleri also came at last over Ered Luin into the eastern regions of Beleriand. There they halted and dwelt a while beyond the river Gelion. Of Thingol and Melian. Melian was a Maia of the race of the Valar. She dwelt in the gardens of Lórien, and among all his people there were none more beautiful than Melian, nor more wise, nor more skilled in songs of enchantment. It is told that the Valar would leave their works, and the birds of Valinor their mirth, that the bells of Valmar were silent, and the fountains ceased to flow, when, at the mingling of the lights, Melian sang in Lórien. Nightingales went always with her, and she taught them their song, and she loved the deep shadows of the great trees. She was akin before the world was made to Yavanna herself, and in that time when the Quendi awoke beside the waters of Cuivienen, she departed from Valinor
and came to the hither lands. And there she filled the silence of Middle-earth before the dawn with her voice and the voices of her birds. Now when their journey was near its end, as has been told, the people of the Teleri rested long in East Beleriand, beyond the river Gelion. And at that time, many of the Noldor still lay to the westward, in those forests that were afterwards named Neldoreth and Region. Elwë, lord of the Teleri, went often through the great woods to seek out Finwë, his friend, in the dwellings of the Noldor. And it chanced on a time that he came alone to the starlit wood of Nan Elmath, and there suddenly he heard the song of nightingales. Then an enchantment fell on him, and he stood still. And afar off, beyond the voices of the Lomalindi, he heard the voice of Melian, and it filled all his heart with wonder and desire. He forgot then utterly all his people and all the purposes of his mind, and following the birds under the shadow of the trees, he passed deep into Nan Elmath and was lost. But he came at last to a glade open to the stars, and there Melian stood. And out of the darkness he looked at her, and the light of Aman was in her face. She spoke no word, but being filled with love, Elwë came to her and took her hand, and straightway a spell was laid on him, so that they stood thus while long years were measured by the wheeling stars above them, and the trees of Nan Elmath grew tall and dark before they spoke any word. Thus Elwë's folk who sought him found him not, and Olwë took the kingship of the Teleri and departed, as is told hereafter. Elwë Singolo came never again across the sea to Valinor so long as he lived, and Melian returned not thither while their realm together lasted. But of her there came among both elves and men a strain of the Ainur who were with Ilúvatar before Ea. In after days he became a king renowned, and his people were all the Eldar of Beleriand. The Sindar they were named, the Grey Elves, the Elves of the Twilight. And King Greymantle was he, Elú Thingol, in the tongue of that land. And Melian was his queen, wiser than any child of Middle-earth, and their hidden halls were in Menigroth, the Thousand Caves, in Doriath. Great power Melian lent to Thingol, who was himself great among the Eldar, for he alone of all the Sindar had seen with his own eyes the trees in the day of their flowering, and king though he was of Umanyar, he was not accounted among the Moriquendi, but with the Elves of the Light, mighty upon Middle-earth. And of the love of Thingol and Melian, there came into the world the fairest of all the children of Ilúvatar, that was, or shall ever be. Of Eldamar and the Princes of the Eldalia. In time, the hosts of the Vanyar and the Noldor came to the last western shores of the Hither Lands. In the north, these shores in the ancient days after the Battle of the Powers bent ever westward, until in the northernmost parts of Arda only a narrow sea divided Aman, upon which Valinor was built, from the Hither Lands. But this narrow sea was filled with grinding ice, because of the violence of the frosts of Melkor. Therefore, Orome did not lead the hosts of the Eldalia into the far north, but brought them to the fair lands about the river Sirion, that afterwards were named Beleriand. And from those shores whence first the Eldar looked in fear and wonder on the sea, there stretched an ocean wide and dark and deep, between them and the mountains of Aman. Now Ulmo, by the counsel of the Valar, came to the shores of Middle-earth and spoke with the Eldar who waited there, gazing on the dark waves. And because of his words and the music which he made for them on his horns of shell, their fear of the sea was turned rather to desire. Therefore Ulmo uprooted an island which long had stood alone amid the sea, far from either shore since the tumults of the fall of Ilúin. and with the aid of his servants he moved it, as it were, a mighty ship, and anchored it in the bay of Balar, into which Sirion poured his water. Then the Vanyar and the Noldor embarked upon that isle, and were drawn over the sea, and came at last to the long shores beneath the mountains of Aman, and they entered Valinor, and were welcomed to its bliss. But the eastern horn of the island, which was deep grounded in the shoals off the mouths of Sirion, was broken asunder, and remained behind. And that, it is said, was the Isle of Balar, to which afterwards Usser often came. But the Teleri remained still in Middle-earth, for they dwelt in East Beleriand, far from the sea, and they heard not the summons of Ulmo until too late. And many searched still for Elwë, their lord, and without him they were unwilling to depart. But when they learned that Ingwë and Finwë and their peoples were gone, then many of the Teleri pressed on to the shores of Beleriand, and dwelt thereafter near the mouths of Sirion, in longing for their friends that had departed. And they took Olwë, Elwë's brother, to be their king. Long they remained by the coasts of the western sea, and Osse and Uinen came to them and befriended them. And Osse instructed them, sitting upon a rock near to the margin of the land, and of him they learned all manner of sea lore and sea music. Thus it came to be that the Teleri, who were from the beginning lovers of water and the fairest singers of all the elves, were after enamoured of the seas, and their songs were filled with the sound of waves upon the shore. When many years had passed, Ulmo hearkened to the prayers of the Noldor and of Finwë, their king, who grieved at their long sundering from the Teleri, and besought him to bring them to Aman, if they would come. And most of them proved now willing indeed. But great was the grief of Osse, when Ulmo returned to the coasts of Beleriand to bear them away to Valinor, for his care was for the seas of Middle-earth and the shores of the Hitherlands, and he was ill-pleased that the voices of the Teleri should be heard no more in his domain. Some he persuaded to remain, and those were the Falathrim, the elves of the Falas, who in after days had dwellings at the havens of Brithumbar and Eglarest, the first mariners in Middle-earth, and the first makers of ships. Círdan, the shipwright, was their lord. The kinsfolk and friends of Elwë Singolo also remained in the Hitherlands, seeking him yet, though they would fain have departed to Valinor and the light of the trees, if Ulmo and Olwë had been willing to tarry longer. But Olwë would be gone, and at last the main host of the Teleri embarked upon the isle, and Ulmo drew them far away. Then the friends of Elwë were left behind, and they called themselves Eglath, the Forsaken People. They dwelt in the woods and hills of Beleriand, rather than by the sea, which filled them with sorrow, but the desire of Aman was ever in their hearts. But when Elwë awoke from his long trance, he came forth from Nan Elmoth with Melian, and they dwelt thereafter in the woods in the midst of the land. Greatly though he had desired to see again the light of the trees, in the face of Melian he beheld the light of Aman, as in an unclouded mirror, and in that light he was content. His people gathered about him in joy, and they were amazed, for fair and noble as he had been, now he appeared, as it were, a lord of the Maia, his hair as grey silver, tallest of all the children of Ilúvatar, and a high doom was before him. Now Osse followed after the host of Olwë, and when they were come to the bay of Eldamar, which is Elvenhome, he called to them, and they knew his voice, and begged Ulmo to stay their voyage. And Ulmo granted their request, and at his bidding Osse made fast the island and rooted it to the foundations of the sea. Ulmo did this the more readily, for he understood the hearts of the Teleri, and in the Council of the Valar he had spoken against the summons, thinking that it were better for the Quendi to remain in Middle-earth. The Valar were little pleased to learn what he had done, and Finwë grieved when the Teleri came not, and yet more when he learned that Elwë was forsaken, and knew that he should not see him again unless it were in the halls of Mandos. But the island was not moved again, and stood there alone in the bay of Eldamar, and it was called Tol Eressëa, the Lonely Isle. There the Teleri abode as they wished under the stars of heaven, and yet within sight of Ammon and the deathless shore. And by that long sojourn apart in the Lonely Isle was caused the sundering of their speech from that of the Vanyar and the Noldor. To these the Valar had given a land and a dwelling place. Even among the radiant flowers of the tree-lit gardens of Valinor they longed still at times to see the stars, and therefore a gap was made in the great walls of the Pelori. And there in a deep valley that ran down to the sea the Eldar raised a high green hill. Tuna it was called. From the west the light of the trees fell upon it, and its shadow lay ever eastward, and to the east it looked towards the bay of Elvenholm, and the lonely isle, and the shadowy seas. Then through the Kalakiria, the pass of light, the radiance of the blessed realm streamed forth, kindling the dark waves to silver and gold, and it touched the lonely isle, and its western shore grew green and fair. There bloomed the first flowers that ever were east of the mountains of Ammon. Upon the crown of Tuna, the city of the elves was built, the white walls and terraces of Tirion. And the highest of the towers of that city was the tower of Ingwë, Mindon Eldalieva, whose silver lamp shone far out into the mists of the sea. Few are the ships of mortal men that have seen its slender beam. In Tirion, upon Tuna, the Vanyar and the Noldor dwelt long in fellowship. And since of all things in Valinor they loved most the white tree, Yavanna made for them a tree like to a lesser image of Telperion, save that it did not give light of its own being. Galathilion it was named in the Sindarin tongue. This tree was planted in the courts beneath the Minden, and there flourished, and its seedlings were many in Eldamar. Of these, one was afterwards planted in Tol Eressëa, and it prospered there, and was named Celeborn. Thence came in the fullness of time, as is elsewhere told, Nimloth, the white tree of Numenor. Manwë and Varda loved most the Vanyar, the fair elves. But the Noldor were beloved of Aule, and he and his people came often among them. Great became their knowledge and their skill, yet even greater was their thirst for more knowledge, and in many things they soon surpassed their teachers. They were changeful in speech, for they had great love of words, and sought ever to find names more fit for all things that they knew or imagined. And it came to pass that the masons of the house of Finwë, quarrying in the hills after stone, for they delighted in the building of high towers, first discovered the earth gems, and brought them forth in countless myriads, and they devised tools for the cutting and shaping of gems, and carved them in many forms. They hoarded them not, but gave them freely, and by their labour enriched all Valinor. The Noldor afterwards came back to Middle-earth, and this tale tells mostly of their deeds. Therefore the names and kinship of their princes may here be told, in that form which these names later bore in the tongue of the elves of Beleriand. Finwë was king of the Noldor. The sons of Finwë were Feanor and Fingolfin and Finarfin, but the mother of Feanor was Miriel Serinde, whereas the mother of Fingolfin and Finarfin was Indis of the Vanyar. Feanor was the mightiest in skill of word and of hand, more learned than his brothers. His spirit burned as a flame. Fingolfin was the strongest, the most steadfast, and the most valiant. Finarfin was the fairest and the most wise of heart, and afterwards he was a friend of the sons of Olwe, lord of the Teleri, and had to wife Eawyn, the swan maiden of Al-Qualande, Olwe's daughter. The seven sons of Feanor were Maethros the Tall, Maglor the Mighty Singer, whose voice was heard far over land and sea, Celegorm the Fair, and Caranthia the Dark, Corufin the Crafty, who inherited most of his father's skill of hand, and the youngest, Amrod and Amras, who were twin brothers alike in mood and face. In later days they were great hunters in the woods of Middle-earth, and a hunter also was Celegorm, who in Valinor was a friend of Orime, and often followed the Vala's horn. The sons of Fingolfin were Fingon, who was afterwards king of the Noldor in the north of the world, and Turgon, lord of Gondolin. Their sister was Arathel the White. She was younger in the years of the Eldar than her brothers, and when she was grown to full stature and beauty, she was tall and strong, and loved much to ride and hunt in the forests. There she was often in the company of the sons of Feanor, her kin, but to none was her heart's love given. Arfeniel she was called, the White Lady of the Noldor, for she was pale, though her hair was dark, and she was never arrayed but in silver and white. The sons of Finarfin were Finrod the Faithful, who was afterwards named Felagund, Lord of Caves, Orodreth, Angrod, and Eignor. These four were as close in friendship with the sons of Fingolfin as though they were all brothers. A sister they had, Galadriel, most beautiful of all the house of Finwë. Her hair was lit with gold as though it had caught in a mesh the radiance of Laurelin. Here must be told how the Teleri came at last to the land of Aman. Through a long age they dwelt in Tol Eressëa, but slowly their hearts were changed, and were drawn towards the light that flowed out over the sea to the lonely isle. They were torn between the love of the music of the waves upon their shores, and the desire to see again their kindred, and to look upon the splendour of Valinor. But in the end, desire of the light was the stronger. Therefore Ulmo, submitting to the will of the Valar, sent to them Osse, their friend. And he, though grieving, taught them the craft of shipbuilding. And when their ships were built, he brought them as his parting gift many strong-winged swans. Then the swans drew the white ships of the Teleri over the windless sea, and thus at last and latest they came to Aman and the shores of Eldamar. There they dwelt, and if they wished, they could see the light of the trees, and could tread the golden streets of Valmar, and the crystal stairs of Tirion upon Tunar, the green hill. But most of all, they sailed in their swift ships on the waters of the Bay of Elvenholm, or walked in the waves upon the shore with their hair gleaming in the light beyond the hill. Many jewels the Noldor gave them, opals and diamonds and pale crystals, which they strewed upon the shores and scattered in the pools. Marvellous were the beaches of Elende in those days. And many pearls they won for themselves from the sea, and their halls were of pearl, and of pearl were the mansions of Olwe, at Al-Qualande, the haven of the swans, lit with many lamps. For that was their city, and the haven of their ships, and those were made in the likeness of swans, with beaks of gold, and eyes of gold and jet. The gate of that harbour was an arch of living rock, sea-carved, and it lay upon the confines of Eldamar, north of the Kalakiria, where the light of the stars was bright and clear. As the ages passed, the Vanyar grew to love the land of the Valar and the full light of the trees, and they forsook the city of Tirion upon Tunar, and dwelt thereafter upon the mountain of Manwë, or about the plains and woods of Valinor, and became sundered from the Noldor. But the memory of Middle-earth under the stars remained in the hearts of the Noldor, and they abode in the Kalakiria, and in the hills and valleys within sound of the western sea, and though many of them went often about the land of the Valar, making far journeys in search of the secrets of land and water and all living things, yet the peoples of Tunnar and Al-Qualondë drew together in those days. Finwë was king in Tirion, and Olwë in Al-Qualondë, but Ingwë was ever held the high king of all the elves. He abode thereafter at the feet of Manwë upon Tani Quetil. Feanor and his sons abode seldom in one place for long, but travelled far and wide upon the confines of Valinor, going even to the borders of the dark and the cold shores of the outer sea, seeking the unknown. Often they were guests in the halls of Aule, but Celegorm went rather to the house of Orome, and there he got great knowledge of birds and beasts and all their tongues he knew. For all living things that are or have been in the kingdom of Arda, save only the fell and evil creatures of Melkor, lived then in the land of Aman. And there also were many other creatures that have not been seen upon Middle-earth, and perhaps never now shall be, since the fashion of the world was changed.